Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want to contact us, send an email to psychologypathwayspodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. On this episode of the podcast, we'll expose what I call the big lie of higher education that I think limits many students' success. We'll also offer solutions that are practical, available, and valuable, specifically internships and research experience. And finally, we'll interview two students whose stories illustrate the value of internships and research experience. So, Aurora, when I graduated from high school, would you believe that tuition in the University of California system was $0?
No, that just blew the back of my head off.
Yeah.
I can't fathom that.
If you could buy your textbooks and if you could live somewhere, you could go to UCLA, UC Berkeley, UC San Diego, UC Davis. They all had $0 tuition.
How old are you?
We don't need to talk about that. I'll just say that there's been some inflation since I graduated from high school. And so $0 in back when I graduated in today's dollars is $0 because there's not really inflation on zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had something else happen. What happened was that state support for higher education has gone down. And it's inevitable unless you don't want to have Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. I mean, there's some things that have to be paid.
Right.
And so the states have been reducing their state support for higher education. It used to be 80% of the budget of some schools was paid for by the state, and then it became 20% as time went by.
Yeah.
And that's something that people talk a lot about in higher education. And one of the things that has happened is that changed our business model to where now universities and colleges are supported almost entirely by tuition. And this led to what I call the big lie, which is the idea that if you take all the credits that you need to take, that you've finished your education. And I think that's a side effect of the fact that we now sell credits for money, you know, when we didn't used to have to. We didn't used to be really trying hard to make sure that all the classes were full and that there was big classes, because back when the state was supporting everything, you didn't need to do that. And a side effect of that is that if you've completed all the credits, people sometimes think they've completed the education.
Right.
And that's just not true. We know, for example, that mid-career success is predicted by how many relationally integrated and work-integrated experiences you've had. So if you knew a professor or a staff person or an instructor and you worked with them over the semester, also the work-integrated experiences, if you did an internship, if you did research experience, if you had a co-op, if you had anything that took like a clinical student teaching,
yeah,
things that take a semester or more. And, you know, what I'm talking about is experiential learning, really. And that's one of our themes of talking about Psychology Pathways, is making sure you get the experiences during college that you need.
Yeah, it's crucial. You have to have that. I mean, it's not just about the books that you read or the tests that you take or the papers that you write or the classes that you pretend to, you know, pay attention to.
Yeah.
There's more to it.
Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, this is nobody's fault that we have to sell credits for money, because the world changed in the last, we'll just say 30 years. The world changed. And now we're supported by tuition dollars instead of state support. And that's just how it is. And you know what? When you think about it, access to education has gotten a lot better. And so back in the day, maybe it was impossible to get into these colleges because, you know, if they're supported by the state, they can only take so many students.
True.
And so as we want to increase people's opportunities, we and admit more students in America, and this rises our enrollments and it rises our income. And also, don't get me wrong, you do need the curriculum.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There are classes that are more foundational that you have to take, and then you move on to the next one. And I'm not saying that that's not part of it, but I'm saying that's just one side of the teeter-totter, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so a balanced education is going to have both the credits and the curriculum and the right courses. And there'll be some room for putting in things that you're interested in, taking minors and things. And then to that, you add the other half.
Yeah.
Or I guess I'm calling it the other side of the teeter-totter.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it is 50%. I truly believe that. So, Yeah.
And that balances out in a lot of ways. It's not just research and internships, but those are the two prototypes in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
It could also include your work or your student organizations, yeah. your leadership opportunities. There's all the things you do, lectures you attend, you know, everything you do in college. That's why you paid tuition for a land grant or a residential or a brick and mortar university mm-hmm. or college, liberal arts college. The reason you paid the big dollars in tuition is to go there and take advantage of what is there.
Yeah.
And if,
as opposed to online for profit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's ways to get credits for less money. And in fact, that's what legislators seem to want, is for us to figure out a way to get credits for less money. And I get that. But today, the theme that I want to talk about is how important it is to learn outside the classroom. And we're going to be interviewing some people talking about internship and research experience, because at least in psychology, that's what you can do. So on the podcast, we're big fans of students completing internships as a way of prototyping or trying on or testing out different fields. And today we're talking with Caitlin, who's an intern at a social service agency. This is a really common type of internship for psychology students to have. Obviously, she's not a spokesperson for any particular agency, but that's okay because it makes a good generic example of what would it be like if I did an internship. So Caitlin, tell us a little bit about your internship experience.
So as you said, I work for like a social service agency, victim assistance agency. So a lot of what I do, is part of it is I work a hotline. So people will call into, we call it the crisis hotline. And it can be a range from people that just need someone to vent to, you need someone to talk to, or people who need resources. So some people had just gotten thrown out of their homes and they have nowhere to go. I call different shelters and get them in. That's a big part of what I do. We also do court advocacy. So I go to court with a advocate, of course, I shadow, and we sit in court and we basically help people through the process who don't know the court process, because most people, you know, who aren't familiar with it don't. So we're basically just kind of there for them. And we as well have gone to crime scenes and been there for the victims in those crime scenes. So homicide, suicide, we go and we're basically just there for them. And we kind of like describe it, they kind of describe it as like a buffer between the police and the victim. So the police can kind of do their job. So we're there for the victim. We answer their questions instead of them going to the police and the police are trying to, you know, investigate. So we're just like that buffer. And along with that, we also go to hospitals of trafficking and rape victims. And once again, we're just there for them. It's shocking on how many people don't have someone that are going through that. So we are that for them. We go and support. We offer resources. Recently, there was a woman who was badly beaten by her husband. And we got her into a shelter with her kids so she did not have to go back to her husband. So it's just stuff like that that we really do. Lots and lots of experience.
Okay, so I'm sure they said, okay, Caitlin, you're going to be our new intern. And then on day one, they just threw you out in the field, right?
Yeah, it was terrifying. it was terrifying. I'm not going to lie. There was training. So before I was even allowed to answer a phone, talk to any client, I had to go through 45 hours of training. So it was like a Monday through Friday training course. And it was 8 hours every day. And it was a lot of just situations. We did role playing, which was super awkward. We had to pretend like we were on the phone with someone and pretend like what would we do in certain situations. So we had to do that. But it was still very much, we got kind of thrown to the sharks a little bit. But now I know that was the only way for us to learn. But at the time, I was petrified. Because like the hotline would ring and be like, okay, answer it. And I was like, what do you mean answer it? I was terrified. But all in all, now I know that was the only way I was going to learn, by doing. But yeah, it was definitely terrifying to first start, because it was just kind of like, go. They're just kind of like, okay, go. And yeah, it was very scary at first.
And speaking of learning, I'm always curious to hear what kinds of things you learn on an internship that you can't really learn in a classroom.
So I've learned a ton. I genuinely think I've grown more in my internship this semester than I have, honestly, in a classroom. I've grown a lot, just like learning how to be a professional in situations where it's really hard not to let your emotions get the best of you, I think was something I had to learn very quickly because of like the situations I had to deal with, as well as boundaries, which is something that is hard to grasp. And my supervisor pounded it in our heads, such as like, it's hard not to get personal with these clients. It's really hard not to just, an example of like my supervisor gave me was this woman needed diapers for her baby. And like, you just so badly want to go to the store and buy this woman diapers and you can't. She's like, you have to find a resource that will give her diapers because you just can't get too personal with them because one, it affects you and it also affects them and kind of puts you in their life in a way you're not supposed to be, if that makes sense.
This happens too a lot for criminology and sociology majors. And one of the things that they need boundaries for is because if they're working in corrections, people will take advantage of you.
Yes.
And so the first time, maybe you buy them some diapers. And the second time, they need to use your cell phone to call somebody.
Exactly.
And before you know it, you're implicated in something. And then the metaphor is sometimes people get walked out.
Yep.
They get walked out of the facility because that's the step before we're going to have to prosecute you or something. And there are very rare circumstances under which sometimes people do like help prisoners escape or something like that. And so I understand how social service agencies have to teach their interns how to have the right boundaries for your protection.
Yeah, and it's really hard to learn that because you just want to help. And I think most psychology majors go into psychology because they want to help.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it's hard not to be like, well, just let me run to the store and get that for you real quick. You know, like I have the means to do that, but I can't because of, like you said. So that part was really hard to learn. And I don't think that's something that, you know, a class really teaches you.
You didn't read that in a book.
No, okay. I did not. I did not. But it's something you had to learn quickly just because of the caliber of things we deal with. You have to learn very quickly that you have to leave work at work. And that's something else I had to learn, I guess, that you don't learn in the classroom is I was letting things get to me when I left. A lot of the things I saw, I would call my mom upset and be like, I can't do this. Like, it was like, I can't see all these people suffer. And she's like, you have to leave work at work.
Yes. Classrooms don't really teach you about work-life balance.
Nope. Nope. They do not.
And that's something that during college or education, it's easy just to think it's your whole life. But when you're in an internship, you do have to leave it at the internship sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How long have you been there?
So I started in August of this year. So I've been there through my whole fall semester. And I'm planning on going back in the spring as well. So.
Okay. And so as far as like future plans, has this solidified anything for you or have you thought about possibly branching out? Like what has this internship done for you in regards to moving forward?
Well, like the biggest thing I want to say is I think it helped me grow as a person 100%. As for like solidifying my plans, I know for sure I want to help people. I know that's what I want to do with my life. I think I want to go more into counseling and I think that helped me learn that. But it's something that I really do enjoy doing. I also really like being like on the scene and going to the hospitals. So have I completely made a life plan for my internship? No, but it definitely has helped me direct the way I want to go, if that makes sense.
Okay. So like I remember talking with you about the idea of possibly getting an internship.
Yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit about like what steps did you go through in order to get this internship?
So I emailed you a lot. I emailed you a lot because I was very stressed about getting an internship.
Was it an intimidating process?
It was in the sense of I was sending in all of these applications and I wasn't hearing anything back. So it was intimidating, but it was also just kind of it was honestly kind of defeating at first. I'm not going to lie, just because I was applying and applying and I wasn't getting any results. And I started kind of feeling like I'm not going to get an internship. Like I'm, you know, I'm scared that I'm going to go like graduate, go into the workforce with no experience. And of course, that didn't end up happening. But it was intimidating at first, especially just like all the applications and all the questions and sending them out and standing by my phone and waiting for it to ring to get an interview. So, yeah, I guess it was pretty intimidating.
So, Caitlin, you're clearing up a major misconception, and I really appreciate it. Some people think that you're just handed an internship. And
nope.
That's not how it works.
No. Nope.
You go find a social service agency or an opportunity or a company and you find an internship and then we sign you up for it. And so I appreciate that. Although it's intimidating and maybe discouraging, you have to persevere because it sounds like it's been worth it.
Oh, it's absolutely been worth it. And then, like I said, after emailing Aurora a bunch of times, I also used the Kent's psychology department website where it lists all the internships. I actually use that a lot. But how I ended up landing my internship actually was an email. I think it was from Aurora that my supervisor reached out to the Kent psychology department and was like, oh, yeah, we need interns. I think that's where I ended up getting it. And I saw the email and I applied within like 5 minutes. I saw it because I wanted an internship so bad and I wasn't getting one. So as soon as I saw that come up, and this was kind of at the point where I was kind of giving up on getting one for my fall semester. And I was like, okay, I'm going to apply. So I applied and I actually heard back. I don't know if it's because I applied so early, like as soon as she sent that email, but I heard back from my current supervisor at my internship the next day. And I got an interview and I live in Dayton, Ohio. This interview was in Akron, Ohio. And she told me I had to come up that week or it was going to be given to someone else just because she was trying to find, which I understand, she was trying to find interns. So I drove 4 hours to Akron, Ohio that week for my interview. And I got it on the spot, though, which is really cool.
That is cool.
But I really wanted it. And I think, like you said, like you have to really want it and you kind of have to fight for it a little bit because a lot of people want it.
I guess I should clarify that there are some universities where they do have prepackaged internships with which they match people. But I suspect that that's at probably smaller universities or colleges where they have a much more developed pipeline for specific internships. It also might be more common in certain majors like nursing or maybe in education for student teaching. Yep. But for psychology departments and psychology students and similar majors, it sounds like there is a lot of entrepreneurship in terms of finding what you want.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And something that actually stuck to me, you told me in one of our meetings, Aurora, you were like, nurses go to school, nursing majors go to school and they become nurses. And you said, engineers go to school, engineering majors come to school to be engineers. And you're like, psychology majors go to school and you become kind of whatever you can make of it. And it's something that actually really stuck with me. And I actually used that a lot to persevere to find an internship because I was like, I have to make something out of my I love my major.
Yeah.
But I was like, I have to figure out what I want to do with it because it's not like a straight shot job.
That's awesome. I'm glad that something I said to one student actually landed. So
it did. It did. Good.
All of the years of hard work has paid off. I'm super excited. Like when you came in and you started telling me about this internship, like the back of my head just blew off. I was just so excited for you. And I was like, you have to be on the podcast. You have to talk about this.
Yeah. And I'm glad I'm able to like reach other people to tell them about it because it's definitely so worth it. And like I said, my family asked me, they're like, what are you going to do with the psych degree? And I'm like, I literally repeat that line to them all the time. I'm like, I will figure it out. And my internship's definitely guiding me the right way.
So, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. So for students that are out there listening right now, what advice do you have for them if they are contemplating possibly getting an internship? What kind of advice?
What would you tell
Caitlin from 6 months to a year ago?
I would tell Caitlin not to give up. There is an internship out there for you. Don't get discouraged. It's absolutely worth it. It's a little extra workload on your already, busy schedule. And I think that's what a lot of people are a little nervous about internships as well, because it's like a second job if you already have a job or if you're in school. It's absolutely worth it. I have learned so much. I have grown as a person so much. And I feel 100% more confident in my field than I did before I started. I was still unsure if this was even for me. And now I know it is. And we have one-on-ones with our supervisors. And even my supervisor sat down and she said, you remind me of a younger me. And she was like, you were born for this work. And it really, it's just, it can't get any better than that. Like someone telling you you're doing the right thing. And I think anyone would benefit from an internship. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin. I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us. And I know that your story is really going to hit home with a lot of the students out there listening. So thank you so much for stopping by with us.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
So today we're here with Rachel, who's going to tell us about what it's like to work in a research lab. This is one of the other things that we really recommend, either research experience or an internship. And we'll only use your first name, Rachel, because you're a student here. But why don't you tell us a little bit about your research experience?
So this is my first semester in Dr. Koifman's Emotion, Stress, and Relationships lab. So our research mostly focuses on emotion processing and regulation and its association with different stressors in life. So we look at emotion processing in people who are resilient, but on the other hand, people who are developing mental illness. So a lot of our research involves looking at those kinds of situations. I'm in the lab 6 hours a week. As of now, it's my first semester, but I'm increasing my lab hours next semester. And in my lab, I do most of like the entry level stuff as of now, because I haven't learned as much. So I do a lot of data entry, audio transcriptions, diary tracking and scheduling. So a lot of like intro level stuff. My lab members, I work with a lot of different people, and the age range, the level varies from undergraduates like me, but then we also have postdocs, postbacs. We have current graduate students in Kent State's graduate program. And then we also have like the senior RA. So we have a whole wide range of people that are involved in the lab with me.
That's outstanding, because you both described it conceptually, mm-hmm. and you told us the practical, what do I actually do, mm-hmm. and you told us about the structure of the lab. And I just want to point that out, because when it's time for interviews for graduate school, some people stop at the level of, I enter data, I transcribe videos, mm-hmm. there's a lot of post-baccalaureate students that have already graduated, et cetera, et cetera. But having started with the concept of, this is why the lab is here, this is what we're studying, that's outstanding, and I hope that all the listeners remember that.
Yes.
Anyway, so was there a lot of training when you got started?
So the training might vary depending on what lab you're in and what populations you're working with. The training that I completed, it was an online city training program, and it was 10 modules, and it mostly just revolved around the ethics behind research, just to give me more information or more knowledge going into my research. So it was about 10 modules. You did some reading and then took a quiz. And that's the only training I had to initially get into the lab. And then the training from there on after was more pertaining specifically to that lab.
So most of the training is very specific to the lab, but I'll point out that the city training is something that's national. Mm-hmm. And so if you're thinking, maybe I'm going to get into a lab in the next semester, it's not wrong to find your institution's webpage for city training and just go ahead and get started. That'll make things a little bit smoother.
I agree.
So what kinds of things have you learned about being a professional through research experience that you would not have been able to learn in a classroom?
Well, so the biggest thing that stands out to me is exactness, preciseness. In the classroom, especially in lecture halls, it's really easy when you're taking notes just to get general ideas down. You're just looking at the bigger picture. But in research, details matter. You have to be very, very precise, very, very exact in what you're doing, whether it's data entry, audio transcriptions, interview processes. Everything has to be very standardized, because any common errors, common mistakes can really affect the outcomes of the data. So that's probably the biggest difference between classroom and research lab.
So how long did you say that you've been in this current lab?
I started at the beginning of August, so is that 4 or 5 months?
Okay, so you are planning on staying and doing a little bit more and kind of branching out a little bit?
Because I've learned a lot, and I really am interested in the research that we're doing, so I do continue to stay a part of this research lab.
So I know that I work with you as an advisor, and I've talked with you several times, but along with doing research, has this been more of like a solidifying process for you? Has it like determined maybe what path you might go down in the future?
Yes, it definitely has. Before being in a research lab, I thought that research was strictly numerical. Whenever I had an idea.
Wait a minute. It's not? Not just ones and zeros?
Not just ones and zeros. Oh. It's a big surprise. Okay. I think I had such a very limited scope of what research actually was. And I thought that you'd just be sitting at a computer all day looking at a screen, number crunching, just translating and everything. But instead, it was actually more so realizing behind the scenes that these numbers cross over to people's emotions, feelings, behaviors. It crosses over to so much more, and the number represents so much more.
So the crunching numbers is way downstream from a lot of the stuff that happens on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
I think that people don't usually have an appreciation for how many steps there are in a research project. And some simple question like, how do people manage their emotions when they're under a lot of stress? It takes an enormous amount of planning and regulatory approval and preparation, even to get to the point where there's a number to look at.
Exactly. I agree.
And so what are the steps of getting involved in a research lab? How does that work?
So how I got involved in my research lab is I make sure to look out for the weekly emails that are sent out from the psychology department. And at in October and then also in February, they send out the email that contains a research list of the research labs that are looking to accept research assistants. So I took a look into that, and what I did was I looked through every single listing, and I found the listing that was most applicable to my interest, my goals, ultimately what I wanted to do maybe in the future, or what aligned with my interests as of now. So I looked at, picked about two or three labs that I thought I would be interested in, and I ended up reaching out to the contact information that was listed in the listing, and I reached out professionally because it is a professional situation.
Absolutely.
So I stated who I was, my interest, and asked if they had, still had openings in their lab and if they were looking for people to fill the spots.
So last night we had two speakers from other universities at our community speaker series, and they both mentioned in their acknowledgments all of the undergraduate students that work in their lab. Mm-hmm. And so I know that this is at every university in the country that has a good-sized psychology department. Mm-hmm. The research labs are fueled by the energy and the interests of the undergraduate research assistants and the postbacs and the, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so wherever you are, there is an email or a list or some process by which people find out about the research opportunities. And I promise you that the faculty are looking for motivated people to come and work in the research lab.
Mm-hmm.
So was it intimidating or was it easy?
Yes, at first it was very intimidating, only because it's a new experience, and more often than not, new experiences are a little intimidating. So I had to just kind of go for it in a way, obviously being respectful and professional and going in there with that mindset. But as, again, like Joel mentioned, is the research assistants that are currently in the lab, the professors, the faculty, the people that are a part of the lab want research assistants. They want people to be involved in their research, and they want help. They want to teach people. They want people to learn about what the research is and about the process of research.
Has it been valuable to network with the other research assistants at all?
Yes, most definitely, especially those that have been in the lab longer than me. I can learn from them new skills, but then also from the graduate students in the lab have been very helpful with process of graduating and applying for graduate school.
Yes, that's where your inside information comes from, because mm-hmm. you're talking to someone that's already on the other side of the velvet rope.
Yes.
And so you mm-hmm. can find out, what is it that I actually have to do? What did you do to get here? I mean, you could do an information interview for free with someone that's already working alongside you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other undergraduates is where you find out all the, you know, what's on the street in terms of what classes should I be taking, mm-hmm. what's a really good opportunity around here. And so I think that when you find your home in a research lab, maybe you get credits, maybe it's volunteer, you're getting experience, but you're also building your network of people that can tell you how it's really going to work.
Definitely.
And I suspect that the people working either on internships or in the research labs are going to be the students that kind of have it together a little bit better in terms of they're already engaged in the department.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, this is the right group to be talking to about, hey, what are you doing next semester? That kind of stuff.
Yes, perfect. Even so, the faculty advisor, professor that is the head of the lab, they're really looking forward to take you under their wing and use you as a faculty advisor. You can go to them and ask them for advice pertaining to their lab or to graduate school. So it's just a very good environment to learn and grow as a student or as a researcher.
So what advice do you have for a student who's contemplating maybe becoming a research assistant?
I would say go for it. If it's something that you are debating on doing or contemplating doing, I think you might as well take the step, go for it, see if it's something that you're interested in. So in my case, at first, I didn't know if I was completely interested in research, but from my experiences, I realized that I do like research, and it's not exactly what I thought it was. So whether you enjoy doing it or whether you're doing it and you're realizing it's not for you, either way, you're learning. You're gaining valuable skills, valuable knowledge, and learning more about yourself, and it might even help lead you down the path of where you need to be for your career options later on.
Okay, so just for quick clarification, is research zeros and ones?
No,
is that
it's
all
not.
You're doing?
Not at all. Not
okay,
even close.
What about, is it white lab coats and beakers and bubbling like different colored liquids?
No.
Okay. Is it monkeys in a cage?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
If you're in an animal lab, maybe.
Yeah, that would be a primate lab, and those are pretty hard to find these days. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Rachel, and talking to us. I think that it's going to be a real encouragement to the students that are maybe considering this. I guess one last question. What year in school do you think is appropriate to start getting involved in research?
I think it's never too early. I started my sophomore year of college. I used my freshman year as a year just to get acquainted to the apartment, acquainted to college, and then the second semester of my freshman year, I started looking for prospective labs to be in for the fall. So it's not too early. If you're feeling confident and ready to start early on, I would say go for it. But especially if you're planning on going to graduate school or have that in the future in your mind, I think it's better to get started early so you can get more in-depth learning through the labs.
Good answer. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
This was part one of two. Next week, we'll be back with another podcast featuring student interviews, illustrating the value of informational interviews, specific credentials, and employment with a bachelor's degree in psychology.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.